Today's guest, Chris Kelly, he's an attorney, but his real job is an executive vice president of Home Services of America. And he was on in April to discuss the ongoing changes to the Multiple Listing Service, National Association of Realtors, and how buyers' agents are to be compensated. Big changes are coming as of August 17th, 2024. Been in the news, a lot of misinformation. So today you'll get the, as Paul Harvey would say, the rest of the story. Welcome back to Radio Real Estate, Chris Kelly.
Hey, Mark, thanks so much. Great to be back with you.
Thank you. Thank you. In April, you were on, and we really went over. And if you missed that, go to RadioRealEstate.com and put in Chris Kelly in the search for podcasts. And you got a really detailed description of what was happening. You can do a thumbnail recap before we get into the specifics of the changes and what's going to happen to buyers. But also a quick recap of Home Services of America and the connection with Berkshire Hathaway?
Yeah. So we are kind of the real estate arm of Berkshire Hathaway. Home Services, which a lot of people haven't heard of, but they know all of our operating companies. We operate about 51 brands across the country. They're in Southern California. We operate as Berkshire Hathaway Home Services California Properties. We have other Berkshire Hathaway Home Services franchisees across the country, but we also operate a number of independent brands across parts of the U.S. as well. So in Northern California, we have Intero Real Estate. We have Dyna Real Estate in the Minneapolis market, Long & Foster up and down the East Coast. And so we're kind of a conglomerate of numerous brokerages along with mortgage, title, and insurance operations as well, Mark.
It's remarkable. There's so many people. Like I look at my local Berkshire Hathaway office, and you have management, and then you have people down and out of LA. We have an in-house attorney. We have so much staff and so much training going on. And even through the local multiple listing service and the California Association of Realtors, staff of attorneys. I mean, there's so much staff and money. When people talk about, oh, I got to pay this commission, it generates so much assistance. I would say to buyers and sellers, but maybe even more so for buyers. And boy, I'm a little concerned if that level of service is going to be able to be maintained depending on what happens August 17th. What is happening August 17th, 2024?
Yeah, so last time we were on, we chatted about this settlement, this very significant settlement that had been entered into by the National Association of Realtors with a class action of plaintiffs and bringing certain business practice changes to the industry. August 17th was selected as the date that those business practices would go into effect, even though the settlement is not even scheduled for final court approval until November 26th. And so we are starting these business practice changes ahead of final approval of the settlement. And they're across the country, but every market is starting to kind of implement these rules in their own unique ways and fashion. So it's keeping a lot of people on their toes and trying to figure out exactly what the world will look like, let's say, on August 18th and beyond.
Now, November 2026 is what happens again with the courts?
So when you entered into the settlement, it was filed with the court. It did receive preliminary approval by the court, this settlement between NAR and the plaintiffs that outlined these business practice changes. But the court will not rule on a final approval to the settlement until November 26th. So between now and then, various parties can file objections to the settlement. The Department of Justice has said that they are potentially going to file a statement of interest either in support or opposing certain parts of the settlement. So a lot can happen between now and November.
And we don't know. The DOJ has not made a definitive, they haven't given a definitive thumbs up or thumbs down?
Correct. We can read the tea leaves. They have intervened in some of these other cases and kind of, you know, let their ultimate intentions out into the daylight a little bit, but they have not formally filed anything in this case yet. When they have made statements, they have, you know, kind of suggested that there are parts of the settlement they like, and then there's parts of it that they don't think go far enough. Namely, I think if the DOJ, the current makeup of the DOJ had their preference, there would be no offers of compensation or concessions between sellers and buyers when it comes to real estate fees and costs.
You think they would suggest that a seller could not hire someone and pay them to sell their house?
It would be that you could hire someone to help sell your house, and then you could hire someone to help you buy a house. But in no circumstance would a seller or its listing broker be allowed to offer a compensation to the buyer's agent, buyer broker, like we currently do today. Like, each party would pay their own parties. That's it. There's no offers of compensation between the two of them.
And so
that's what they have alluded to.
That's not what's happening August 17th, but that is possible. That's a potential under the existing DOJ, which come November election and January, things could change on that. And then perhaps.
A lot can change what we saw. And the reason I say that is because at one point, NAR and the DOJ had entered into a settlement agreement, and this would have been under the prior administration. And, you know, resolving certain things that the DOJ did not like about NAR practices, it did not really go as far as we're going to right now. And then after the administration changeover in 2020, the DOJ decided to pull back on that settlement, which resulted in a lot of litigation between NAR and the DOJ, ultimately with a court ruling that the DOJ did have the ability to basically reopen their investigation into NAR. And so a changeover in administrations can absolutely have an impact on the direction between the DOJ and some of this NAR material.
My guest today is Chris Kelly. He's an attorney, but he's also Executive Vice President of Home Services of America that manages Berkshire Hathaway here in California and a total of 51 brands across the country. So obviously, he's very much on top of and involved with what happens with the day-to-day operations of buyers, listing agents and buyers agents. And we're going to jump into what's going to happen August 17th, but depending on how it goes, we're going to have, and I think it was a good idea for NAR and everyone to just say, okay, let's implement this right now. That's part of the settlement. We'll do it right away. And it's going to be very interesting to see what happens the next 12 months to August of 2020. Wait. November 2026? That's 2 years from
November
now.
November 26th of this year. Sorry, that's the specific date. November 26th, 2024 is the hearing date for the final approval of the settlement.
Oh, thank goodness. I wrote down November. I wrote down November 2026.
Yeah. Oh, November 26th is the actual date of the hearing.
Yes. Oh, okay. Yeah. So that's only a few months. Yeah. And I don't think there'll be enough time between August 17th and November 2024 to see the ripple effect of this impact. So what happens August 17th? What are buyers going to have to do August 17th that they haven't been doing before?
Yeah, so the main change that buyers are going to see is right now when you're working with a buyer's agent and you're interested in a particular property, obviously most of us know the MLS, the Multiple Listing Service, is the database that most realtors use to obtain information about houses that are listed for sale. Currently, as of today, when I'm looking at houses in the MLS, I can tell you exactly how much offer of compensation, commission, that the seller or listing broker is willing to pay a buyer's agent that brings a buyer to that property. After August 17th, that data will no longer be available with the MLS. It is being pulled out of the MLS. Sellers can still offer compensation in a couple different ways that we'll get into, but it will not be displayed in the MLS any longer. Brokerages can put it on their website for their own listings, if I'm working with a buyer's agent, the buyer's agent can call a listing agent and say, my buyer may be interested in your home. Is there an offer of compensation or a concession on this property? So it's a little bit going to become more of a manual process for a buyer and their agent to determine if there is any compensation being offered as part of a purchase of the property, and if so, how much.
And current listing agreements with sellers will state that a seller is going to pay the listing broker a commission, and then there's a spot to say, by the way, we're going to put this in MLS, and we're going to put in, let's say for discussion, the commission's 5%, we're going to put in 2.5% to the buyer's agent. And that's not going to be in the listing agreement anymore. And
correct.
MLS is, but you're saying that a seller can still offer compensation to the buyer's agent, and the listing agent can actually advertise that on his website, just can't put it in MLS. So it's kind of like it's taking teeth out of the MLS, but it's not changing what a seller can do.
Yes. And so, you know, to me, the idea behind these lawsuits have always been claimed to be adding more transparency, more clarity to the real estate process. My concern is that we're actually taking a little bit of that transparency and clarity away. It becomes more opaque to a buyer on whether or not they are going to be responsible for paying their agent themselves on a particular property, or if the seller in that situation is offering an offer of compensation to cover the cost of their buyer's agent. So it just requires a little bit more manual work to make that determination.
And potentially, these changes are starting August 17th, 2024, and then in November, there's going to be the official court case to approve this, and it's possible that they might go even farther. You were saying that if the DOJ had their way, they would potentially, they could say, no matter what a seller wanted to do, they would prevent them from offering compensation to a buyer's agent, potentially?
They can certainly make that argument, but they do not have the power to come in and dictate that across the country. What they can do is file, like a lot of other interested third parties, they can file something with the court, and they can try to tell the judge, we don't think you should approve this settlement because we don't think it goes far enough. We think that there are still antitrust issues that cause a problem here. But they can't just come in as a DOJ and kind of edict, you know, what all of us have to do. But they can certainly try to flex the influence and the authority that they have to try and get the judge to not approve the settlement and to make the parties have to negotiate something that would go further. Again, I don't think it's right for the consumer. I look to my prior world of attorneys, and what we see in the legal world is, let's look at personal injury law, for example. If I'm injured by a truck, going down the highway, oftentimes I'm not paying out of pocket for my attorney. I'm hiring a personal injury attorney who gets paid if I recover. Sounds very similar to buyer agency. Right? Like, you know, if I'm successful in helping you purchase a house, then I collect my fee. The other thing that we saw too in the case was some arguments against what we would call, you know, they said there was a normal and customary real estate fee that it was antitrust. The broker just got together to set this. We can look across the country and see commissions are very wildly in different amounts based on different parts of the country. And there's all kinds of other brokerages, as you know, Mark, that offer different types of commission structures for consumers that they can choose from. Just like and what was interesting is when the attorneys in this case filed for their fees as these settlements started coming in and they asked for their fees, they said, this is the normal and customary fee that is charged in these types of class action cases. And so it was just a little bit ironic, you know, what we saw there. And so once we go into August, again, sellers can still, under the structure of the settlement, they can still make offers of compensation to a buyer's agent. They can make a concession to the buyer's agent and handle this. It's just going to look different than the way it does today.
My guest is Chris Kelly. He's an attorney, but his job is Executive Vice President of Home Services of America that operates 51 brands of brokers across the country, including Berkshire Hathaway here in California. Your example or analogy of you get into a car accident and then you hire an attorney who will work for you for free, and subject to him winning and getting a settlement, he'll then take a percentage. I think he takes more than 6%, usually 30 to 50%. And
yeah, 30 to 50. Yeah.
And the actual attorneys who were representing these people who were suing NAR were getting a commission. And it's true irony. And so you take the analogy farther and say, you know what? If you get into a car accident and you want to sue, you can no longer hire an attorney based on a contingency. You have to hire the attorney and pay that attorney to represent you, whether you, well, I was going to say whether you win or not. How far can that analogy be drawn to a buyer's agent?
Yeah. So, I mean, so one of the things, when we were talking about the DOJ, what they have stated is their preference is that sellers would be responsible for paying their agent. Buyers would be responsible for paying their agent. So yes, in the analogy that you drew, that would be correct, that I would have to, I the buyer would be responsible for making the payment. And the reason that becomes a concern is, like, you get a certain affluence of consumers, and maybe that's not an issue, but for not even just first time home buyers or low income buyers, but really, you know, even the kind of mid price move up buyer, you know, you're saving for a down payment, you're saving to cover some of the closing costs, you're saving for just the normal things you have to buy when you move into a home, and then you layer on a commission on top of it, and it becomes a lot more challenging, you know, to come out of pocket. And so the alternative in that situation would be, you know what, I'll just forego representation, and I'll just have to do it myself. And I think it is underappreciated by some of those that have been involved in this litigation, and also by some of the regulators, of what a buyer's agent really does. I have been in different hearings involving the DOJ, the FTC, and some others, and there's this thought that, well, now that we have the internet and properties are online, buyers find the property themselves, therefore, really, what does a buyer's agent do? And that is just a fundamental misunderstanding of what a buyer's agent does. It's not about just finding the property. It's the 99 other things that happen between finding the property you're interested in and then actually getting to a closing table. And so I think buyer representation is a critical part of the home buying process. And it, you know, I do get concerned about different policies and business practices that might either encourage or force more buyers to try to go it alone out there.
And when I was using my analogy about the attorney and you get hit by a truck, and instead of just hiring an attorney who's going to work on a contingency fee, I kind of got lost. But I realized the law was attributed or applied there, it would be that I would have to hire an attorney, and I would say, I agree to pay you a fee if you get a settlement. So the analogy with a buyer would be, you sign a buyer broker agreement and the buyer agrees to pay the agent if he sells and finds me a house. Is that correct?
That's correct. Or you could have another business model where you pay them hourly. I could definitely see a buyer model that comes out and says, you know, I work for X dollars an hour as I search and help you identify properties and get you under contract. So there's an hourly rate or some type of hybrid where there's a retainer that you pay up front for the work and then another percentage at closing. So there's a lot of different ways that it could end up now if you did see more buyers paying themselves.
Chris, I'd like to take a commercial break and do another segment with you if you're available.
Absolutely.
Chris Kelly, attorney, is my guest. He's Executive Vice President of Home Services of America, which operates 51 brands of brokerages across the country. And I want to get more into the specifics of a new form. You know, come August 17th, you just can't call up an agent and say, I want to see this house. There's going to be paperwork to sign and agree to. And I'll tell you my story. I work with a buyer, got a big check this year, but I work with the buyer for 10 years, never had a buyer broker agreement with them. You're listening to Mark Schneidman's Radio Real Estate, radiorealestate.com. Stay tuned. You'll be right back.